You are locked on Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. And today was a very good day to talk about the Warriors, and I had a conversation for this as a crossover episode with Locked On Blazers host and apparently good luck charm Eric Garcia Gunderson and also his co-host Dane Carbaugh about tonight's remarkable, if you want to call it that, 127-104 win for the Warriors over Portland. Really the first time in the regular season they put it all together. So conversation runs about 40 minutes. I think you'll really enjoy it. And also, this episode, I'm excited to say, is sponsored by the new Locked On Warriors sponsor, but one that I have personal experience with and really enjoy, SeatGeek. And so you can go to SeatGeek, you can download their app and use the promo code LOWARRIORS for $20 off your first purchase. SeatGeek, LO Warriors.
Hello and welcome to November 1st, Blazers Warriors Locked On edition of both of our podcasts. I'm your host of Locked On Blazers, Eric Garcia Gunderson, and I'm joined by Danny LaRue, host of Locked On Warriors, and my co-host for Locked On Blazers, Dane Carbaugh. What's up, guys?
Yeah, glad to be on. Let's do it.
Eric, I'm pretty sure that Warriors fans are going to want you to be scheduled every time the Warriors and Blazers play each other, because right now it's 2-0 for pretty strong performances by Golden State with a lot of shakiness in between.
Yeah, it feels like the Blazers are almost like the stability that they just bring the stability to the Warriors, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of different things in this. And I mean, the Warriors, generally speaking, have struggled a little bit defensively, kind of to find their identity in the absence of, you know, of Bogut and Festus Ezeli, you know, current Blazer, but still out. And tonight was an indication that, yeah, they still do have something close to the fastball they had last year. And they absolutely didn't in the first half when Lillard was playing really well and everything like that. But the idea that the Warriors can still get stops and everything that comes with that later on, and as they did in particularly the third quarter, was notable in its own way.
Yeah, I thought that the Warriors just really showed what they can be. And they got lots of great contributions tonight. Ian Clark, I think, is a guy who stood out to me. Ian Clark, who I once ran into at the Salt Lake City airport. Very nice guy. I don't know. Yeah, that's my Ian Clark story, by the way, that I told you guys about. But the Blazers themselves did not perform very well. The Warriors, Steph Curry, amazing in the third quarter. It seemed, obviously, that's kind of redundant to say Steph Curry and amazing in the same sentence, but he was. And yeah, Blazers really took one on the chin tonight.
Yeah, I think a big portion of what I really saw in the third quarter in terms of, I know that it's Steph Curry going up against them, but he really exposed a weakness on their interior defense, being able to, yes, he had a couple, you know, he had 3 3-pointers, I think, directly in a row or something, but he also had those two drives where he ended up with and ones, a little up and under, using the basket to defend against the defender. And that's just kind of shows against really elite teams, against really elite point guards like that, or elite dribblers, I should say, the Blazers are still going to suffer. And I think sort of going back to the Evan Turner thing is that the Blazers defense needs to be better, and they need Evan Turner to be better on defense on that wing to help dig down and slow some of those guys up.
Well, and that ties in with something that Warriors fans have been noticing for the last couple of games, is that instability defensively anywhere hurts you everywhere. And while you don't think that a three like Evan Turner being shaky there necessarily helps Stephen Curry get a bucket, you know, at moments it does. It doesn't always. You know, if he shoots a 30-footer, he shoots a 30-footer. But at other moments, you know, that kind of shakiness, or a guy maybe helping in the wrong way, there are lots of different ways that a defense can struggle, that you can get spillover effects that do other things. And Portland, despite their many gifts, they don't really have those traditional rim-protecting centers that they're giving minutes to right now. I mean, I have high hopes for Festus if he gets to play. Maybe Ed Davis can fit that role if you play him with the starters a little bit more. But that's not really what they do right now. And Portland's a spectacular team, but they have different strengths.
Yeah, they definitely just, I think to an extent as well, I thought that they were going to be ahead of the learning curve, and it seems like with Turner, they've really just hit another one. And they are still, I think, figuring themselves out on the bench, which I think last year was a major key to the their run down the stretch. And I think right now, one of their struggles is just finding consistent play that is not only productive for Evan Turner individually, but productive for the team as a whole.
Yeah, the thing I noticed tonight, too, was the Warriors very specifically, it seemed to me, while I was watching their defensive strategy, when Turner and Aminu were in the game together, they let Turner drive and sag back on him and then did not rush out to Aminu at all. They wanted him to shoot. So, Danny, if we're talking about the thing where, okay, we're not seeing Evan Turner pass the ball, maybe it's Eric that said that, but we're not seeing Evan Turner pass the ball, that's the reason why those passes aren't successful, is because Aminu cannot shoot yet this season. Who knows if he will catch on, and that's those two, maybe that lineup doesn't work, maybe those players don't need to play that many minutes together. I don't know.
Well, Aminu, just one thing that I want to jump onto that I thought about earlier in the season, and the Warriors showed it tonight, was something that I was concerned about, and that is that teams still, as great as Aminu shot last year and as great as he played for the Blazers last year, teams still do not respect his jump shot against Lillard and McCollum. And I thought that tonight you obviously saw, you know, worst case scenario of that strategy. And it's going to take Aminu or Harkless or someone, I don't know who it is. I mean, tonight was in the fourth quarter, it was Jake Layman. I mean, hitting threes, but like someone's going to have to hit threes at that 3-4 swing position alongside Lillard and McCollum, and also give them competent defense for them to get to wherever they want to go.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I mean, something that is just a part of the NBA is that reputation as a shooter is a lagging indicator. You know, it's something that, I mean, with certain exceptions, generally speaking, it lasts too long for guys once they kind of lose it a little bit, and it comes a little bit late. And so at moments, that's going to hurt Aminu because, you know, he's not consistent enough. You know, he has a little bit of variance to his shot. And the Warriors were relatively successful in the playoffs last year, letting him shoot his shot. The same with Mo Harkless. Harkless, I believe, went 0-for-3 tonight. And so they're going to go with that strategy, specifically them, as long as it works. And you also have to consider, I mean, one of the downsides of having those guys, and, you know, if they're going to have off nights, is that even if they're doing better, that's still a trade-off in terms of expected value that you're going to make because Lillard and McCollum are so good.
Right. And it's also the trade-off that the open shots that they are getting are not causing the same stress on the defense that maybe another guy's shots are getting. And so tonight we really saw, you know, I've really been a proponent throughout the preseason, throughout training camp, throughout the summer, of the Aminu Harkless pairing with Lillard McCollum. But tonight you saw the downside of it. They go 0-for-9 from three. And even when they're catching the ball and they're not making threes, they're not drawing the defense to them because they don't have the reputation. And so that, I guess, opens the door that if these teams were ever to play each other in a series, perhaps the Blazers would have to look at starting Allen Crabbe for more and playing him more minutes, just because he's just a better shooter than both of those guys.
You do run into an issue with that, though, because of Kevin Durant. I mean, while I wouldn't say that Harkless had a great night defensively on him, he did a pretty good job. And that's, you know, I think that they would be worried about Crabbe doing it. And again, making decisions, tough decisions, trade-offs and everything like that is a challenge that happens when you deal with good teams. I mean, when you play in the regular season, first of all, you don't necessarily do those sort of intricate game plans for everybody. So that leads to things, you know, teams going a little bit more generic, a little bit more half-baked, let's say, for their schemes in an individual game. But also, you know, there are situations like that where, you know, it's going to be a disadvantage and you just kind of have to choose your poison. And I mean, teams have to do that with Lillard and McCollum all the time. So Portland fans should be pretty familiar with it.
Yeah, I think that the biggest problem that Portland has is kind of the same one that they had last season. I think if you're looking at them from, you know, another time zone or two time zones away, you're thinking that this team is going to shoot a bunch of threes, and that's correct. And they are going to shoot a bunch of threes, and they're going to shoot a bunch of threes against teams that aren't that good. And they're going to make a lot of threes, and then make a bunch of threes against teams that are pretty good. But if teams game plan specifically for them, or have something that's sort of akin to their poison pill, like the Warriors had tonight, they're going to be able to basically lock down and say, we're going to push Damian and TJ off the line, and we're going to let Mo Harkless, who, you know, Mo Harkless and Aminu kind of have really odd, individually separate, but odd shooting strokes and setups to their shot. And while they've shown to be able to hit threes in the past, Harkless had one, you know, above league average season in Orlando. Aminu obviously had last season here in Portland. good teams are going to be able to, I think, push that. And that's the biggest weakness, because it shuts down everything you have with Mason Plumlee being in the starting lineup as a passer. Again, those passing lanes get clogged if people are collapsing on Lord and CJ, and you don't care to go out to the arc to the other guys. And that's kind of the same thing we're seeing with Turner.
Yeah, when you have a bunch of players who are basically, I'm just going to call them, for the purposes of this conversation, negative spacing players, like Plumlee, like Aminu, like Harkless, that aren't going to draw defenders to them, it really makes it hard when those guys aren't making, I guess, what those defenses that are guarding them would think to be unexpected made shots. And so it's a difficulty for this team. And you look at the guys on the team and you think, you know, maybe they have some other counters to, you know, bring on some more shooting and help create more space in a certain matchup like this. But we didn't really see them tonight, and and I don't think that there's really that effective of a counter on the Blazers roster when it comes to this team. I think the Warriors just present a very specific mismatch that makes a lineup that is otherwise very effective in the NBA and was a very effective starting lineup last year look very ordinary.
Right, I agree. It's not like you're going to, say, make a switch to all the progress we saw Harkless make and the, you know, the stats that Olshay has about moving Aminu over to the four and panic and say, we don't have quite enough shooting, so we're going to hope that Noah Vonleh is good at sliding to the corner, or we're going to play Myers Leonard, you know, 30 minutes a game when he's not ready for that. You're right, it doesn't make any sense.
So despite, let's call it an uneven outcome tonight, both of these teams have something to look forward to, and more importantly, in some ways, both of these fan bases do, and one of the best ways to experience both of these teams is to do so in person.
And the best way that you can do that is through SeatGeek, which is the best ticket app and the best website for buying tickets as a sports fan or a music fan, if that's your thing, this basketball season or football season, if you also want to go check out some football games.
Yeah, that's a little bit more pertinent probably for my listeners than yours, but that's true. I mean, they could go up to Seattle for a Seahawks game. But yeah, SeatGeek is great because it has that versatility, and you can also get aspects like deal scores. You can also judge it for yourself, but if you want to use their judgment in terms of whether that seat at that price is a good way to spend your money. And, you know, even though I was in the ticket business for years buying and selling tickets, I found that it was a great way of evaluating that myself. So I trusted their judgment more than I expected to, be considering my experience.
And you can also set up price alerts. It's super convenient. You can set reminders so that SeatGeek lets you know when the price is going to change when the price is changing for a specific game and whether they're going up or down. And then you can kind of make a judgment call then whether you want to buy those tickets then. And it gives you all the most info because it aggregates from all of the tickets websites. It's kind of like kayak.com, but for sports tickets.
And while our discount that we'll talk about in a second is about buying tickets, it's also a good way to sell tickets, because when you think about the way that markets work, you know, you want to have your tickets for sale in a place that people want to buy them, and where people should and are buying them is SeatGeek.
Yeah, and the best part about SeatGeek is that our listeners get a $20 rebate with their first SeatGeek purchase. And you can do that by going and downloading the SeatGeek app, open the settings tab, and click add a promo code, and type in promo code LO Blazers.
Or if you want to support the show of the winning team, you can go to LO Warriors, whichever you prefer.
Download the SeatGeek app and get your free rebate today.
Well, you have to give Harkless a little bit of credit, because it must be hard to shoot threes with your legs spread apart like you're being lowered onto a horse.
Yes, that's a better analogy. I said it looked like he was trying to, you know, when you try to walk across the beams in an attic so you don't step through the ceiling. I looked like he shoots like he's trying to walk across the beams in an attic. But
I was workshopping a few. Like, I thought it was like he was standing on both sides of a picket fence. There are various ones that you could go with, but yeah, it's just weird to see that. Just because I want to give you guys a little bit of consternation, and because it's a part of this game story, can I rattle through Curry's third quarter stats quickly?
Absolutely.
So he played all 12 minutes. He was 8 for 12 from the field, 5 of 6 from 3, 2 of 2 from the line. So a total of 21 points, 2 rebounds, and then what in some ways for a guy who is a point guard, 0 assists, 0 turnovers.
That's pretty incredible. He was the things that he was doing, he was just playing with the Blazers. in that quarter.
Yeah, it was absolutely stupid. I mean, like I said earlier, the three-pointers he had, especially the ones that are on the far side of the camera from where I was watching, were amazing. But the ones where he was just taking out, just ripping out their guts, were those two and one calls down low. If you can't stop him there and you're going to, he jumped into Ed Davis on that one and got that foul. That's just like Ed Davis played it perfect. There's nothing you can do against, a former league MVP like that. Crazy.
He didn't used to get those calls, though. That's a relatively new development.
Yeah.
I guess two MVPs will do that for you.
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, that would fundamentally change it, because one of the big differences with the Warriors adding Kevin Durant is that they last year and the year before, despite all of their success, they were not a successful team at getting to the line. And Durant by himself, just like Harden fundamentally changed the Rockets in that way, Durant alters that, and the Warriors are very good when they're in the bonus because they have a lot of guys who can shoot free throws. They just don't have a lot of guys who generate them. And so if Curry or Klay Thompson, who didn't do a lot of things well offensively in this game, but if those guys can kick it up a little bit more, depending especially like when they use Durant earlier in quarters, they could generate a few more opportunities and a few more easy points that way. And it's not like this offense, if they play like they did tonight, are really going to need any extra goosing.
Yeah, they don't need to get more efficient. But dear God, you're right.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that they can still be better than they were tonight, and it looked so easy. I mean, they had 127 in regulation, and it was like nothing. And
the only player they played in the fourth quarter was basically Klay Thompson.
And tonight is a night. I think we can start like calling this like a studying this genre of basketball, the super team genre. I feel like tonight would have been a night that a super team would have dropped, like a Miami or the LeBron super teams early in their first season. But I think tonight kind of showed also how these guys are not them, and how just so seamless they can fit with one another, and how it's really, they lost their first game by 29, but it's really not going to be that hard to do this regularly.
Portland is also a team that the Warriors get up for. They have a lot of respect for the Blazers. They had that tough series. I mean, you and I talked about it, I think, on The Athletic, about how that was one of the hardest fought five-game series I can ever remember. And the Warriors guys don't forget that. They remember that. And also, Portland had that huge game. I still think it's the best game they played in the regular season last year at the Moda Center, right after the All-Star game, blew them out. And for better or for worse, Golden State, to a man, they have really long memories. And so there was always that possibility. My friend Andy Liu of Warriors World said before the game, the Warriors were either going to win this game by 20 or lose it by 20. And there was a very specific reason for that. And it's that usually when they get up for a game like that, they either blow the doors off the team, or like what happened to the Spurs, where they do that and then they get deflated and then it just really gets out of hand. And so it ended up being the good side this time when it was the bad side on opening night.
How much of that do you think is Draymond?
About 50%, and then 50% is everyone else. But it is true with everybody. I mean, Steph, as much as he doesn't talk about it, he remembers everything like that. And, I don't, there's this weird thing that I generally hate in sports and sports comedy, commentary, of players, giving it their all for a specific game, considering they do that all the time. This isn't professional athletes getting paid millions of dollars aren't sitting there going, oh, I'm just going to give 75% every game, and then, oh, this guy said something mean about me, I'm going to go 100%. But you do see sometimes a little bit of extra juice in specific games, and it combined for Golden State in this one with them playing lackluster basketball the last two times out, and really the last three times out, but the Spurs game was an aberration for a lot of reasons. And usually, the Warriors don't play two bad or three bad games in a row, and so I think they were a little bit mad about that, and so it all kind of tied together. And when they struggled early and stayed in it, I kind of had this thought in the back of my mind, like, this is really bad for Portland, because when the Warriors struggle and aren't out of it, that seems to energize them more. But when they kind of get dispirited, as happened in the Cleveland series a little bit, it happened at various other moments, they can struggle. But if they can stay in it, they're like, oh, well, this will turn around. And sure enough, it did.
Yeah, and they were up at halftime by 6. And I was thinking, Damian was going as hard as he possibly could for those first two quarters, and then they ended up still down by 6. And I think Steph Curry definitely noticed that and came out with an absolute, stick up his butt about it, because and that was the disappointing thing for Portland, obviously, is that you're already down by six. You didn't need to have Steph Curry taking a look at Damian Lillard saying, essentially, Damian Lillard really wants to win this game. I could see that. I know that he's going as hard as he can, and we're only up by six. And we're gonna destroy him. And that's obviously what happened.
Yeah, Lillard had a pretty great game tonight, at least from the field. 31 points, 8 of 19 shooting, 4 of 10 from 3, 11 of 13 from the line, 2 assists. But I think he would have been helped a lot more if some of his teammates he would have had more assists, I think, if his teammates had maybe knocked down a lot more of those passes out of pick and rolls when the Warriors were kind of trying to shut down those lanes.
And you don't want to read too much into a specific game, especially considering, you know, Curry is still making his way back. I mean, albeit after tonight, maybe more than making his way back from injury. But in that first half, he couldn't guard Lillard. I mean, every time they made that assignment, Lillard was torching him. And there are a lot of reasons why that happened. I mean, Lillard's a fantastic player and is very athletic and active, but that is something to note. And last year, Klay Thompson got that assignment a lot more, partially because Curry was either out or limited in that series. But it's not really a regular season issue. It's more of a postseason thing if these teams end up facing each other. But it is worth noting all the same and just kind of filing it away and then thinking about it the next time these teams face each other and then the last time they face each other as well.
Yeah, I think that matchup is interesting with Lillard and Curry because I think that Lillard can really attack that, and I think if even Curry gets onto McCollum can attack that. But I just, you know, McCollum has been a little quiet. He had a really nice finish to their game against Denver, and I think he had a pretty good game in the first game against the Jazz, but he's kind of, I think he's been a little inconsistent, and I think part of that might be also trying to find his flow with Turner. Yeah, I mean, Danny, we've talked about how maybe it's a good idea to try and separate. You talked about this when we had the last crossover Warriors-Blazers pod about how it might be a good idea to kind of give Turner his own unit.
Well, yeah, I mean, so the rationale behind a stagger is that you think that both got either that they need to keep the team afloat, because that's a core one, which is why Oklahoma City eventually went to it. But also, you're kind of thinking about two trade-offs. It's how well do these guys play together, and how well does the team play when they're apart? And so you think about all those things together, and what I've noticed with Portland is just that they're not getting as much of a benefit from CJ being on the floor with Turner as they are with, you know, with CJ and Dame. And so you can do that a couple different ways, but something I'd like to see them try is just build a lineup that's more conducive to Turner, and you're probably going to have a larger drop-off, but you're also going to get a larger boost from the starting lineup. So you get to play those guys together more minutes, they have great personal chemistry, and so there is no specific equilibrium for any given team, and I think it's becoming kind of trendy to think of it the other way, to think of it, oh, you know, you want to separate these guys and do it all that, but that doesn't mean it's the right answer. Sometimes you go to a bench mob because that lineup makes more sense as a five-man unit, and you don't necessarily want those guys intermingling with the starters as much.
And I think they have enough. I think they have enough tools on the second unit to kind of make Turner comfortable and give him space to roam and do all the things that he likes and the ISOs and the, you know, working to that mid-range jumper and get a little bit more space. You could put, obviously they have Crab in there that can slot in alongside him and create some space there. They could give Myers Leonard more time to create more space. They have the tools to do that if they want to explore it.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem for Terry Stotts here early is, unfortunately, as kind of as silly as it sounds now, given the context of, say, the last portion, or, well, you know, pre-injury last year and then how he's looked so far, but not having Myers Leonard specifically as a shooter at that four spot in the second unit, which is what he was last year. That was the thing that people didn't cover him early, then they covered him, then they didn't cover him again for some reason. It was really weird. But that is very specifically how that lineup was built last season. He was that shooter, and they don't have that. And if the first, you know, the, you know, before any subs basically come out, but if the three-point shooting isn't working for the wing and forward rotation for the Blazers, and it's just CJ and Dame, and then you're hoping Allen Crabbe, well, okay, well, you just kind of, you know, if you're if you're staggering it and Turner isn't playing as well as he is, that it's the same sort of thing. It's like, okay, well, instead of teams locking down Damian and CJ at the arc, they're just locking down Crabbe and CJ at the arc. And that's all it is in terms of their three-point shooting. So as much as it kind of seems ridiculous to say it, not having Leonard in there to be able to shoot as the other shooter on that, you know, to have three shooters on the second unit and possibly, again, stagger in on the first unit or make that first unit a little harder to swallow for some teams is, you know, really hurting the Blazers at this point in time. But, you know, he's not fully healthy yet and not ready to go, so we'll see.
Well, as an interested bystander, what I would consider doing, and of course, I'm far from somebody who should be giving Terry Stotts advice considering his success, but I would go even further and say what they should be running, if you want to go full bore with Evan Turner as kind of the anchor of that second unit, and I mean that in the support way, not in the dragging everything down way, is to play Myers Leonard and Vonleh as the four and the five, because then you get a little bit more overall spacing, and then basically see Ed Davis and Mason Plumlee as the combination starting centers. So you go in a little bit of a different direction with it.
Yeah, I really like that idea. And the only issue with doing that, I think, is just that because Vonleh looks pretty good, especially offensively, but the only issue with doing that, obviously, is that Myers is not strong enough to take on even backup centers, unfortunately, at this point in time. He still has to get his weight up. But that's actually a really good idea. Well,
then the worst that happens is you just back him down, I mean, and you send help. I mean, with second unit centers, I mean, yeah, Enes Kanter and guys like that will have a big game, but you don't, like, most teams can't develop sophisticated, like, reactions to help on second unit centers. Like, it's just not, it's not something that really exists. I think a lot of teams have worried too much about that. And also, the idea of center defense, a lot of teams now, that's also the danger of going with a full second unit, is then you're a little bit more vulnerable against a team that staggers a star. But I think they could do well enough to stay afloat. And so, if, let's say you have those two, Turner, Crabbe, or somebody else that can shoot, and then you can even go more for an off-ball one. I mean, when Eric and I talked about this earlier, I floated the idea of Napier, but, you know, it doesn't have to be that specific. And also, if they went to that approach, it's not a rigid, final, permanent thing. It's just like when you have everybody healthy, you go to something like that, and then when the situation changes. But also, you can think about the kind of the marginal roster spots a little bit differently, and you can look for more limited players. I mean, even somebody like Jake Layman, depending on how you want to do it. I mean, I don't think he's the right guy in this long term, but you could plug and play him in a second unit four spot with that kind of a lineup a little bit more easily than some of the other stuff.
I mean, this team is already super redundant. I don't think Jake Layman's going to get time, and I don't think he's the answer. But seriously, I mean, why not? I mean, they could theoretically do that and play around with that back end of the second unit, because I think Vonleh Leonard would be the first look that you'd like to look at, because both of them are athletic. Both of them can space the floor. Vonleh, small sample size alert, is 3 of 7 from three so far this year. And showing, more importantly, I think showing confidence in the 3-point shot and not thinking about it. And there's no hesitation. There's no break in the stroke when he's shooting it. I think that lineup would be really interesting. And I think Davis and Plumlee both do fit better along the starting lineup. It's a tricky thing. And I think that Myers Leonard could help Turner. I think that relationship is because reputation is something that you touched on, Danny. And while Vonleh may be shooting the three well right now and could shoot it well for the next 3.5 months, that doesn't mean teams are going to guard him. And Leonard is at least on the scouting report for teams as a 3-point shooting threat.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think, and the biggest part for Myers in terms of defending is, it's not defending other second unit setters per se. It's more the fact that he's not strong enough to get rebounds. He's not boxing out well enough. And when he gets pushed out of position on drives by opposing centers for their guards, he's reaching and fouling. So the biggest problem with Myers in terms of his strength is not necessarily guarding other bigs. It's that he can't stay in the game long enough to not foul enough, because he is a great idea to help Turner, given that he has gravity.
Well, would you consider using Vonleh more as the nominal defensive center in those lineups and having Leonard on some of the fours, just because they're not going to smoke him as much?
That's tough because Vonleh doesn't have any technique. That's the problem. He's more apt to jump for pump fakes and all that kind of stuff. It's like, you know, Myers Leonard, it gets kicked around here in Portland, but it's not something that I think is known nationally at all. But he's a better post defender than people recognize, even for fans in Portland. That doesn't necessarily mean he'd be a go-to in your starting lineup at all, but he can at least do it. He has good enough technique, and he was strong enough, especially in his upper. That's sort of the biggest problem is he's never been a very strong person in his lower body. He's always been very good with his hands and arms, and since he had shoulder surgery, he has no strength or no definition in his arms and able to play the way he plays. On the flip side, you have Vonleh. I think, Eric, you can maybe back me up on this, where it's just like he kind of has no technique. He's extremely strong, but he gets grounded. We see him get, you know, the thing I've noticed this season, he gets caught up out by the arc a lot and just gets blown by. Then he's using his arms to grab at people as they run by him. So that's tough.
Though I am intrigued by the idea of Vonleh as a center, not to get too far down, but in certain situations, it could be interesting to say you take out Harkless or Aminu early and you slot them back into four at some point, and then you have Vonleh, Turner, Crabb, CJ, and Ed Davis, or not Ed Davis, but, you know, CJ or Napier or another guard in there, and you could do some kind of stretchy lineup that still doesn't compromise you as much defensively, especially while Leonard is still getting back into the shape that he needs to be in.
When you have a team that actually has enough wings to make it work, you kind of need to use that advantage. I've floated the idea of the Warriors playing some Looney at center lineups just because, you know, why not try it? And so it's kind of that same idea of, you know, it's a little bit different. You are going to have specific weaknesses, but that means you just don't deploy it all the time.
Right. And I think in situations, I think the conventional wisdom, and something even Dane and I talked about before this game, was that, hey, you know, the Warriors may not be the best offensive rebounding team, and maybe you try and pound them on the boards with Davis and Vonleh and see how those guys do it. But I think maybe that's not the answer for this specific team because they just may not have the right guys to do that. And maybe for the Blazers' sake in this matchup, perhaps it is best trying to just match up on the wings and try and be small and be quick and kind of minimize that gap and see if maybe, you know, you catch some variance or something from CJ and Dame where you get lucky and then you can beat them, you know, because I don't necessarily know if the answer for this team is they're going to beat them up on the offensive glass and they're going to get second chances. I don't know if they can do that.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting that we're so deep into this rabbit hole. I just want to step back for 2 seconds just because these issues have been swirling, I suppose, over preseason in the first couple of games, but not as apparent until you play the best team in the NBA. And then you're just like, oh my God, all these glaring holes, what is happening? And so obviously what Danny referenced earlier is that a lot of this is going to be way more vanilla and it'll be sorted once, say, you know, once Myers is back, like, fully healthy and all lifted up after 2 more months or something, and it'll be way less complicated until we're right back here during a playoff series between the Blazers and whoever they're playing.
And a dirty little secret is that most teams don't need to worry about how much they match up with the Warriors unless you're the Cavs. You know, like, really, at this point, you know, when you're dealing with those best teams, you know, you just get the best talent you can and you figure it out, you know, when you get there. That's really the way that this works out. And, you know, you really, like, actually, incidentally, I was critical of the way Cleveland added players this summer because I thought they did add players that matched up poorly against the Warriors. But the idea being that if you get into that situation, you can deal with it. But you try to build the best team you can. You try to maximize it for most opponents. And then, you know, if you try your best against the elite teams, but you focus more on, you know, like, what's the best Blazers lineup to beat the Clippers? What's the best Blazers lineup to beat the Rockets? What's the best lineup to beat even the Spurs? You know, like, just, that's not to say that the Warriors are, you know, like, that they're this upper echelon and you can't compete with them. But from a team building standpoint, you can't freak out when you lose to a team that has 4 All-NBA guys. Like, that's just something that happens.
Trust the process.
See, they say that in Philadelphia, but we really are doing that. Like, Portland is definitely trusting the process with Neil O'Shea, for sure.
Well, it's a lot,
and
it's
Evan,
a lot
Evan
easier
Turner
when,
is a huge example.
It's a lot easier when you turn it around in less than a year. You know, like, that. There isn't a whole lot of trusting the process you need to do when you turn a playoff team into a playoff team.
Yeah, no, I mean, everything Neil O'Shea's been, that's why I've been less harsh, I think. Not just because I'm close to it, but just because he has had so much success. That's why I have a lot of patience for the Evan Turner signing, especially since given, you know, Portland's going to win games whether or not Evan Turner is playing well or not. That's kind of what we've seen so far. If Damian Lillard's going to play the way he plays, and if CJ ticks his game up a little bit, I'm less worried with how Evan Turner assimilates over the first 20 games versus I'm more concerned about the last 40 or 30. So
I like Gerald Henderson a lot, but I'm not going to pretend like he played well all the time. So, and that's basically the guy who Turner's spot. That's the spot that Turner's taken in this rotation.
Right.
And it is a concern because you spent $70 million on him. And in situations like this, I think this is the situation that he was this is the situation that the team has sold us that he was brought in for, you know, paying attention to CJ and Dame, breaking down opposing teams and being able to create. And it seems like he was able to kind of create for himself tonight. And so it is a concern. But I think, you know, at the same time, there could be a game if these two teams play in the playoffs where he lights it up from mid-range and is and wins a game on a fluke. And you're like, this doesn't make any sense. But like, that's the playoffs. And like, I think Turner is more of like maybe a guy that you just hope, like almost like J.R. Smith, that like maybe he just like hits some shots in the playoffs. I don't know.
And maybe he figures it out. But we're not worried about it on November 1st.
Well, I mean, there's this weird duality with Evan Turner. Like, I actively hated the signing for a lot of reasons, but the biggest part of it is opportunity cost, not anything else. Because the dirty little secret as a cap nerd on this is that it's really Paul Allen's money. You know, like they were going to lose their cap space anyway, so really the cost was not getting someone else. And we know that they struck out on other guys, so it's not like, oh, they chose Evan Turner over Chandler Parsons or something crazy like that. And they matched on a ton of other free agents and spent even more of Mr. Allen's money. So you think about it a little bit differently in that case. It's not like this is hamstringing them from getting other free agents in the future because they were already going to be capped out. So it's not like the Lakers paying Mozgov or, you know, some of the other bad signings that happened this offseason. It's a very different thing. You know, it is, I think it'll end up being bad. I mean, it's not catastrophic in that way. And, you know, that does in a sense make it more palatable. And the other part of that, which Terry Stotts deserves immense credit for, is that one of the other ways a signing like Evan Turner can hurt your team is if the coach feels an inordinate amount of pressure to do what is not best for the team because of the contract. And to his credit, they've already gone away from that. You know, Evan Turner is not starting games. We'll see. You guys would know better than I if he's finishing games. But you like that kind of circumstance, you know, like that's one of the other big side effects of giving a guy a bad contract. And if they're not going to have that and it's just Mr. Allen's money, it's terrible. But it's not that specific flavor of terrible that is really damaging to a team.
No, you're not seeing it. I think you make a great point. Yeah, no, he's not finishing games. He's not even getting the most minutes off guys on the bench most nights. He, like you said, it's just the money that Paul Allen is spending at the end of the day. It's not really something that's crippling the Blazers, that's keeping them from doing something else. And that is something that they knew going in, and I think they will deal with. And so luckily they have two guys that are really good. They have a coach that knows that just because you pay a guy $70 million, that it doesn't mean that he fits perfectly to go from start to finish with a certain player with other players. So I think the Blazers are in a good spot.
Yeah, they just got to bring in Jake Lehman.
Can I make a formal proposal that each time you bring up Evan Turner's contract and he has a bad game, you just keep on raising the number of his contract? So like maybe tonight it's $71 million. It's kind of like Joe Bluth in his suits. Like, you just keep on raising it each time he has a bad game, and then we'll just see where it goes.
It's kind of like I went to a Kanye West concert once at a music festival, and he started off the night saying, it's like, I can't believe it's 50,000 people. And by the end of the night, he's like, 90,000 people are here enjoying this night with us together. And it was like, and it's just like that. So that's going to be Evan Turner's contract for me.
There we go. That can be my contribution to Locked On Blazers, and I would be thrilled.
Perfect. Anything else, gentlemen? Before we end the evening on this great crossover episode, of Locked On Blazers and Warriors.
I have something.
Go ahead, you go first.
There's a quote here, apparently, from the locker rooms. Kevin Durant on Jake Layman, quote, maybe he should be playing more. That's from Jed Burrell.
Yes. Well, what I was going to bring up was that there were two bench stars in this game. Ian Clark, who had his career high of 22 points, and apparently Eric Gunderson, airport buddy, and Jake Layman. I mean, so it's always exciting, and, you know, you never want to read too much into that. But for the Warriors with Clark, you know, it's a little bit of a different spot because he really struggled over the last couple games, and it looked like Patrick McCaw was taking his spot. But then McCaw got a sprained ankle, and Clark was actually horrendous in the first game after McCaw sprained his ankle. But, you know, when you have a game like that, coaches remember that. And even though Clark was on the team last year, you know, coaches remember when a guy has a good game, and maybe that buys him a little bit more leeway.
One thing that you just made me think of, there could be a show that's basically Hard Knocks for, like, the guys on the rotation of the fringe for the Warriors, because, like, they will surely be in the finals, but they also could be out of the league.
Well, you mean beyond the fact that JaVale McGee should just have his own show 24/7 anyway. So yeah. Separate from that, you're talking more of
his own show again.
That's true.
Like,
right.
Wasn't the other show his mom's show and he was just on it? I'm a little bit confused as of this, and I assume Dane would remember this NBA minutia.
Actually, I'd have to ask Hyken would know about.
Well,
this.
Yeah, Hyken would definitely. Well, yeah, Hyken probably remembers all the facets of it. I think, wasn't he the one who had remembered that they, like, went to the bank on one of the episodes? Like, he just remembers all that stuff.
He's the JaVale historian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a shame that I get to cover the Warriors for The Athletic, and I should just hire him as a JaVale consultant along with doing all of his Bulls obligations.
He's got to get that JaVale consultancy role. I think that was what he was put on this earth to do.
Yeah, I will mention it to the brass the next time I see them. I seriously will.
No, hey, I think the world needs the JaVale insight.
Yeah, and as much as I try to, like, as I have embraced it, I come at it from a different perspective than other people. And I do, like, it is weird because I actually think JaVale helps this team. And so I've been advocating for it, not as a mockery thing, not as a, you know, as a novelty. I'm legitimately interested. But, you know, if the novelty is all we get for right now, I'll root for the novelty.
All right.
Thanks to Eric Garcia Gunderson and Dane Carbaugh for taking the time. You can listen to both of them on Locked On Blazers. You can also follow Eric on Twitter at Eric Gunderson, ERIK_GUNDERSEN. And you can read Dane Carbaugh at NBC's Pro Basketball Talk. Congratulations to him on the new gig. And you can also follow him on Twitter at Dane Carbaugh, DaneCarbaugh. He does some really cool video work. I'm a big fan of some of the stuff that he does there. I'm a big fan of a lot of what he does. But so it was fun to talk with them. And this was an incredibly impressive performance in that third quarter. And Nate Duncan and I talked a lot about this on Dunked On, which I actually recorded after this, but before this is being published, about the idea of this being closer to what the Warriors will be eventually. And the more important part there is on the defensive end. And so we saw Kevin Durant and Draymond Green and Andre Iguodala kind of as a trio playing really good defense, and Durant at the four sliding in more to what his eventual role will be, let's say in the playoffs, of being a stopper of drives and weak side defender and so many of those other good things. And he has looked a little shaky as a one-on-one, you know, small forward defender, but presumably for the most part he will be kind of sliding out of that role in the playoffs and look something more similar to what Oklahoma City did to great effect in the conference finals when they looked so good, which was Ibaka at the five and Durant at the four. And the Warriors have enough wings to make that work, because even if it's just Clay and Andre Iguodala, that's enough. But if somebody like Patrick McCaw can step up, that's another good thing. And one of the other big takeaways that I didn't talk about as much with them, partially because it's a crossover show and you don't want to make it too Warriors focused, is the idea of how I thought this was really significant for Ian Clark. Because Clark had been rough, particularly in the game against the Suns right after Patrick McCaw got hurt. He didn't play at all in the first half against the Pelicans. He didn't play at all until McCaw got hurt. We don't know if those were, you know, if that was a direct cause, but it certainly felt that way. And then he was not only great offensively, people will focus on the career high 22 points, 8 of 8 from the field, but in the third quarter, he played very solid defense on Damian Lillard, who was a brutal cover for anybody. but I would have not expected Ian Clark to do so well there. He looked stronger than I thought he did. And the idea of having him defend ones is something that the Warriors should consider moving forward, because you can play him in different alignments at that point. And depending on how the other team handles their, you know, their rotations, Sean Livingston should be able to defend a fair amount of second unit too. So you could even slide those assignments around a little bit. And Steve Kerr has been willing to be flexible there in ways that are a little bit less traditional. And extending that to the second unit guys would be a nice wrinkle that they could go to. And you can also do that with Curry and so many other guys. And also that connects with the idea that I've supported of, from time to time at least, playing a second unit group of Clark, McCaw, and Durant at the 1, 2, and 3, giving you a little bit more defensive versatility, and because you're generally comparing that to Sean Livingston, probably some more floor spacing. And so you can also do that with those three and then and Livingston at the one, but having them at the 1, 2, 3 gives you kind of a different kind of athleticism that could be exciting to see. And it's not perfect against every team, but one of those things to consider. And when you have a backup point guard in Sean Livingston, who is kind of a rarity in the sense that A, he's really good, and B, you don't want to play him too much because, you know, his minutes are valuable. He's getting a little bit older. He has all his crazy lower body stuff from his past. Having something like that that can really work would be a big help for the Warriors' longevity. So it is something that I really do want to keep an eye on long term. So that's really it for this. There are a lot of things to decipher with this game. And of course, the Warriors have a massive, massive contest with the Thunder, maybe more emotional than from a basketball standpoint, considering all the Durant stuff. That will be on Thursday. So naturally, there will be a Locked On Warriors after that. We'll do something which will be the Thursday episode as well. My hope is that will be actually with Fred Katz, who does Locked On Thunder, great guy, because I think we might do something post. So like that's a little bit flexible, and we'll see how it works out. But I've really enjoyed doing this so far. For those of you that haven't listened to it, and it's funny, I got a little flack on Twitter for having him on because people who didn't really listen to it, but I'm really proud of the podcast I did with Ian Carmel. So he's a comedy writer, Blazers fan, was one of the more outspoken taunters of the Warriors after the whole 3-1 thing and their fans. But the reason I wanted to have him on was to talk about kind of the psyche and the way that other teams approach the Warriors. And I think it was a clarifying thing for me also as a longtime Bay Area resident of really how all this kind of stuff has taken shape. And a reminder of kind of where all this started and where it all went. We talked about Run TMC, we talked about We Believe, and how this whole story came together. And so I think it's a nice thing to go back and listen to. And of course, I'm proud of every podcast we put out, but I thought that one in particular was something that will stand well over time. So you can check that out. However you listen to Locked On Warriors, whether that be Audio Boom, our host, iTunes, any of the great podcast players that exist, you can listen to it that way. Also, I don't mention this enough on the podcast, but if there is a way that you like to listen to shows that we are not a part of, let me know. There are certain ones that it is, let's call it a tactical decision that we are not a part of, but there are other ones, it might just be lack of awareness. It might be that there's some sort of weird application process. You know, lots of them go in different ways. So if there is something that you would prefer to listen to this on, or maybe somebody you know that like, hey, they're not listening because of X, you can always suggest it. And, you know, there might be times that I don't accept it or there are logistical reasons outside of my control, but I always want to listen, and your input is incredibly important to me. And I've been so thankful for those of you who have used that opportunity, as I want you to be honest and to be straightforward and to say what you want, because this is a new endeavor for me. And I am somebody who is all about listener satisfaction, because that's the only way to make this successful. So you can reach out to me on Twitter at Daniel LaRoux, DanyLeroux. Email DanyLaRouxMBA@gmail.com. Keep an eye on the show, Locked On Dubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook. And if you prefer to email the show, you can do LockedOnWarriors@gmail, whatever makes you happy. If you want to support the show, there is one more thing that you can do than usual, but the usual spiel is subscribe, download every episode, leave a rating, leave a review. Those things really do matter. But if you want to make a real impact in the next short period of time, go to SeatGeek, download their app, use the promo code LOWARRIORS, and you get there. It's a great thing. I love the win-win situations because you get $20 free. You get $20 off your first order. So you buy something, you buy tickets to an event, whether that be a Warriors game or, you know, maybe you're a Niners or Raiders fan and you listen to the Locked On podcast for those and you get really enthused and you want to do that. Or I think Kanye is going to be around again soon, whatever it is. You can find it on SeatGeek. You can do that. And so you get money off. And you tell them that you're coming from the show. So that means that they want to sponsor the show. That means that, you know, I not only do I get a little bit more to do it, but that means I'll be more encouraged to do maybe do more shows, maybe try to do some weeks with Sixers and things like that. And, you know, it's just another way to support it. And it means a lot to me personally. And with all of the shows I've done, there's been a wonderful response to that. And I really do appreciate it. And when it's something that I support, like SeatGeek, and when it's something that can really help you because it's free money, it's even better. So SeatGeek.com, or SeatGeek app more accurately, and that's the best way to do it because that's where you get the promo code LOWARRIORS, and you get $20 off your first order. And so, yeah, I think that's a nice way of supporting the show. $20 is significant money on an order, and I've used it before. I really do enjoy the product, and as you hear my reads over the course of the weeks, you will hear more about my background in the ticket business for those of you who don't know it. So it's something I know a lot about. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.